Bill Haney has spent many decades in communications and book publishing in Michigan. And the result is a collection of great war stories, the kinds of tales that make you want to park yourself next to him, perhaps on a bar stool, and listen to his memories. Well, here's the next best thing to that bar stool, Bill Haney's new memoir, What They Were Thinking, Reflections of Michigan Difference Makers. There are 18 profiles in the book. Ernie Harwell gets two different chapters, but that's great because it's Ernie Harwell. Bill, just what were you looking for when you chose the people to profile in your memoir?
I think the common denominator really was people who made a difference, whatever field they might be in. Ernie, of course, broadcast, Elmore Leonard, a great crime fiction writer, Sue Marks, I think our number one film producer and director in
Michigan. Oscar winner, yes.
All of these people, and not all were well known. For example, right nearby in Dexter, a young man named Lieutenant Milo Radulovich was involved in something that changed broadcast journalism through Edward R. Murrow, when Edward R. Murrow picked up his story. Fascinating stories, and some of the people were well-known and some were not, but they all made a significant difference.
I like that, Michigan difference makers, and they do all have that kind of vision to kind of look past what's accepted and go beyond, but also be authentic to who they are.
Right, and really the reason I wanted to do this book was that while there is much written about many of these people, much of it is, I felt, rather superficial and often redundant. And I felt there was much more to them. For example, Ernie. Everyone feels that they know Ernie. When I first met him in 1984, when he had me on his pregame show for a little Detroit Tigers calendar I had done, so I was his guest. And Ernie invited me up to the broadcast booth for a cup of coffee and to talk about books. And I told Ernie it would be a tragedy if he left this earth without getting all of his stories down. And, of course, he laughed me off and said, nobody's interested in my little 20-second stories between pitches. And I said, well, think about it, Ernie. Well, 2 days later, he called, and he had spoken to Miss Lulu that night at dinner about this. And Miss Lulu, of course, said, you listen to that, Mr. Haney. You do that book. And a year later, we did.
I want to talk a little about Ernie and the stories you share with Ernie. And boy, you sure picked up at a good time that wonderful year of 84 when they won the World Series. What was it like to walk up into that legendary booth? And Ernie called it the best seat in baseball. Do you remember that?
And it was very much. It was, I think, a June day in 1984 when Ernie had me on the pregame show. And we did the taping out in the aisle. On the runway up to the grandstand, and he said, come on up and have a cup of coffee. And, of course, right away you hear the crack of the bat, you know, and you smell the hot dogs and all that. And it's so evocative to be there, especially, though, to be in that little booth with Howard Stetzel and Paul Carey. And it is indeed the finest seat in all of baseball. I've been in a number of those booths, many of them with Ernie. But there's nothing like it was at Briggs Stadium, Tiger Stadium. And it was a delight. And, of course, Ernie was just exactly what you would expect that he would be. He was Ernie Harwell. There was no artifice there, no pretense, no social, but yet public Ernie. There was just one Ernie Harwell.
And he was that way with everyone he met, because I know if you cross paths with Ernie, he'd remember you.
Yes.
and really cared about you. And yeah. You take us into the hue and cry over Jose Feliciano's version of the Star-Spangled Banner. I remember that being performed in Game 5 of the World Series at Tiger Stadium. That was October 68. And Ernie feared that might cost him his job because he was the one that told him about it. And later in the book, talk about a crisis moment in a sense for Ernie. You take us inside something that truly was one of the biggest blunders that the Tiger front office and radio station WJR ever made. And that was firing Ernie. Well, if you could read us, it'd be so kind as to read us an excerpt from your book, and it's called this chapter is The Inferno at Michigan and Trumbull. And so this is the beginning of when this press conference started.
Right. Well, the baseball staff opened the proceedings with a brief comment that Ernie had a statement he wanted to make, but then stepped quickly aside. Ernie thanked everyone for coming out. Then he got right to it. He said the words that Tiger fans thought they would never hear. And this is Ernie's quote. The Tigers organization has made a decision to go in another direction. The room had already grown quiet the moment Ernie stepped up. Now, except for the cameras, it was perfectly still. They have decided to install a new radio play-by-play man, Ernie said. It was as though an electric current surged through the room. Reporters stopped taking down notes, shook their heads, and looked around at the stunned reactions of their colleagues. Cameramen with gaping mouths zoomed in on Ernie. He was clearly the most composed person there. He said he respected the right of management to make this change, though he did not agree with their reasons for it. Ernie expressed his appreciation for all that the organization had done for him over the years. He stressed that it was the right of a company's management to make personnel changes for whatever reason. Ernie explained that the Tigers had wanted him to say that this was his decision, but he could not do that because that was not true. He felt his abilities had not diminished, that he was capable of calling the play-by-play well into the future. Now he would stay on only through the 1991 season. When Ernie finished his remarks, it was obvious that most of the journalists had checked their professional detachment at the door.
And boy, those questions began. And of course, we know the Tigers and WJR realized that was a horrendous mistake, and they did bring him back. I'm speaking with Bill Haney about his memoir, What They Were Thinking, Reflections of Michigan Difference Makers. And I want to switch now to a very different but extremely well-known Michigander, Dr. Jack Kevorkian. When you met him, where was he in terms of his notoriety at that point?
He was already well established on his assisted suicide crusade. And my dear friend and a wonderful announcer named Jack Lessenberry knew that I did books. But Jack knew that Jack Kevorkian was going to be going to jail and wanted to have something to do while he was in jail. And he thought he just might want to do a book. And so Jack Lessenberry thought of me, and we met in Jeffrey Feiger's office and talked about the book. And the book that Jack wanted to do was a reprint, an update of a book that he had done on dieting. And I thought, just think about that a minute, Jack. The ultimate diet book by Jack Kevorkian. I mean, so that's when I met him, and I kept in touch with him. I had some fine chats with him at some very posh parties. We'd go off and sit in the corner and just people watch and talk about books. And Jack Kevorkian was a brilliant and fascinating guy who, by the way, had memorized the dictionary. And he loved to interrupt a conversation and say, you know that word you just used, the etymology of that word. And he would go off and you could never finish a conversation with him.
I know. I actually crossed paths with him as a reporter, and I remember there was such life in his eyes.
Isn't that an ironic thing? It is true. And Jack was a delightfully droll guy, had a great sense of humor. He was not macabre at all.
Well, certainly there were people who saw him as a crackpot and others, the supporters, who thought of him as a saint. As you got to know him, how did you view him?
I had a very, very warm and I think probably conventional relationship with him. But I found that is true with most of these folks, that they may have this persona and this public image, but at the end of the day, they are really just people. And the one common theme, as I mentioned to you, was that they did make a substantial difference and they cared passionately about what they were doing. Every person in this book, whether it was Denise Illich for education, J.P. McCarthy, all of these people had a passionate belief that they wanted to do the best that they could with the opportunities that they had and be as helpful as they could to as many people as they could. All of them shared that.
It is a fascinating book, and anyone growing up in Michigan will see these names and go, aha, and I want to know more about them. The memoir is What They Were Thinking, Reflections of Michigan Difference Makers. And we want to let you know Bill Haney will be reading from his book and signing it at Literati Bookstore in Ann Arbor, and that'll be tomorrow night at 7 p.m. And some of the proceeds of this book, What They Were Thinking, you are using to fight illiteracy.
That's right. Reading Works in Detroit is a very important program. And we are trying to be as helpful to them as we possibly can in their efforts so that people can at least fill out an application blank and get a start in life.
Again, Literati tomorrow night at 7 p.m., reading and signing What They Were Thinking, Reflections on Michigan Difference Makers. Bill Haney, it was a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.